Hey, welcome to episode 102 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I am your host, Steven Stiles. And you know, the playoffs are well underway, and it was my intention to start off with the playoffs. But there's a couple of bizarre stories out there I think that I have to start with first before I get into the playoffs. Among the things circulating out there are the discussions regarding five insurance policy goaltenders that the Montreal Canadiens could add this offseason. Why? I mean, seriously, that's my question. Why? Montreal, this year, everybody talked about, oh my God, they've got three goaltenders. It's a three goaltender situation. It's not fair to Sam Montembeau. It's not fair to Caden Primo's development. Jake Allen's got to go. Even though Jake Allen is a great mentor, great locker room guy, great team guy, they got to make room for Samuel Montembeau and Caden Primo. And they did. Made a great trade. I think got a very good trade value on him, given how he'd played in Montreal this year. He was reaching towards the end of his career. He's gone to a team that is further ahead in their development and has more current stars, let's call it, for lack of a better term, ready to perform in the playoffs, and played very well for the New Jersey Devils. But Montreal already has, in addition to Primo, who I maintain, out of Samuel Montembeau and Caden Primo will eventually be the number one goaltender out of those two goaltenders. And like I said, for many episodes this season, the team plays better under Primo. They seem to have more confidence. There's just something about the way or something that he commands from the team that isn't there with Montembeau. Yet, that said, Montembeau has the ability to steal games, which he has, as has Primo, on many occasions. And Montembeau has played very, very well. He has definitely exceeded expectations. And yeah, at this point, people would say, given the amount of games he's played, because he stole games for them last year and this year repeatedly, and seems to have the perfect personality and isn't affected by the stress that the Montreal market has. But with all that said about Montembeau and Primo, you've already got Jakub Dabysh, who is looking great in Laval, had a phenomenal second half to the season, right up through the last games. You've got Jacob Fowler enjoying his first year in Boston in the NCAA, had a phenomenal year. You've got Evgeny Vulakin in the Russian League, tearing it up again this year. Quentin Miller put together a much better year this year, unfortunately got injured at some point, but had very respectable numbers in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. You've got Emmett Crotteau from a previous draft in the 2022 season, putting it together in Clarkson. Probably people like Crotteau will be backups. Quentin Miller might be a backup, might be a starter. Definitely Jakub Dabysh, Jacob Fowler, and Evgeny Velikin can all be starters in the NHL with what they're showing right now. And you've got two young guys in Montreal right now. I don't get it. Five insurance policy goaltenders. Seriously? Again, why would you bog down the organization taking roster spots in the NHL or the AHL that prospects need? And number two, and I really think this is hugely misunderstood or not even understood at all, every team has a maximum amount of player contracts that they can have at any one given time under the collective bargaining agreement. And that number is 50 contracts. You can't just sign an extra 10 guys through various positions and go, oh, well, this would be a good depth player. This would be a good insurance policy. You don't have that kind of room. And on top of that, Montreal's got so many prospects. Do you want to lose the prospects because you have veterans signed for depth and insurance policies? Now you can't sign your prospects? They can either walk away completely. Montreal doesn't get any compensation. They can re-enter the draft. Who knows if Montreal gets to redraft them. Why would Montreal lose young, thriving talent just for that? That makes no sense to me at all. The next story circulating out there that makes no sense. Three mistakes Kent Hughes can't afford to make. Really? Has anybody from the day he's been brought in by Jeff Gordon, along with Jeff Gordon himself, have these two guys made a mistake yet? The only thing that could even be pointed towards was last year, not this year, when the Canadiens apparently received some significant offers for Josh Anderson at the time. It would have been great if they would have taken one of those offers. Because an offer like those that offers multiple multiple first round choices and other options will probably never come around again for Josh, given the season that he had this year. Montreal now could end up with nothing more than maybe a second round pick, and it would have to be to a team that has a real affinity for him, such as the Flyers, and their head coach, John Tortorella, loves that guy, so you would have to leverage him in a trade to probably even get a second round pick anymore for him. So I guess if you want to call that a missed opportunity, but it still wasn't a mistake, what mistakes are these people referring to that Kent Hughes can't make? He hasn't made any yet, and doesn't look like he will in the near future or foreseeable future. Everything he or Jeff Gordon have touched to this point, and I keep saying this, has turned to gold. Every move they've made has been beneficial to the team. Every move. I just don't get these people that want to keep calling out. It's like, well, you know, he's going to make these mistakes. We know that. No, you don't. You don't have a clue. You're clueless about that. The guy excels at his job. Sit back, relax, and realize that too, positionally, is no longer a problem for the organization, and enjoy it. And this one might truly be one of the most frustrating reports circulating around out there, above and beyond everything. Five specific defensemen the Canadiens should go after this offseason, and certainly should add a veteran to a third pairing defensive partner, as it would really help the Montreal Canadiens. Again, it's almost like taking a page out of a parental book. Just the response to that is no, no, no. They don't need that. What is wrong with these people? If you're talking about the Canadiens having veteran leadership or needing that for guidance with the significant amount of young defensive prospects they have playing, don't you already have that in Mike Matheson and David Savard? David Savard in particular has been given constant compliments in his mentorship, in his abilities to settle down younger defensemen, to bring a calmness to their game. Mike Matheson has been a phenomenal impact and mentor, especially for the more offensive and giftedly skating defensemen and prospects. What's going on? What third pairing veteran do they need? What, Arbor Jacki or Lane Hudson, Caden Gooley need a veteran defenseman to calm them down or something? No, they don't. And again, right now, you've got Caden Gooley, Arbor Jacki, Lane Hudson, David Savard, Mike Matheson, Jaden Struble, Jordan Harris. Coming to the team still, David Reinbacher, Logan Mailou, who I don't think neither one of them, along with Lane Hudson, two of the three of which made their late season pro debuts this year, are very far from making that roster. Number one. And I didn't even mention Adam Engstrom and many others that'll be in training camp. You don't have room. You don't have the luxury of signing as many players to contracts as you think you might want to. Again, that's a determining factor. They're not going to screw up their chemistry. One of the things, if not the thing that I love about Jeff Gordon and Kent Hughes the most, they have a plan, they're sticking to it, and they're not going to disrupt it. Thank God they're in charge of that, because other people would be blowing up the team, especially with the resurgence, which I find just off the charts mind-numbing. People are like, oh, now Montreal can swing a trade with the LA Kings and they can finally bring in Pierre-Luc Dubois. Why? What possible reason? The guy was a total waste and bust in Los Angeles this year. I mean, quite honestly and outright plainly, he sucked. He was an $8 million payroll waste by the way, in year one, making $8 million of 8 years. So he's still got 7 years to go. Anybody out there really thinks taking on $56 million of his contract is a good business idea? Are you kidding me? He wasn't even a quality third line center in Los Angeles this year. Los Angeles lost that deal. Winnipeg clearly cleaned up on that with the players they acquired and getting that just head case out of town. Because that's basically what he is. He is one of those players, he believes he's bigger, better, and more important than an organization, and he's not even remotely close to that. He isn't. Not even close. The desire that's out out there to bring Pierre-Luc Dubois back to Montreal is nonsense and just the definition of stupidity in every way, from contract value, which Montreal doesn't need, which would just tie their hands for years unnecessarily. And performance on the ice is laughable. I mean, literally, there's any center Montreal could pull out of Laval right now that would play better for that team than Pierre-Luc Dubois would. It's not even a contest. And right in there is the, oh, well, you know, two players that have to return to Montreal and would be welcomed with open arms would be Tyler Toffoli and Sean Monahan. Again, why? There's like a repetitive question in all these, and that question is, why? Again, in this case, do you want to stunt the growth of a player prospect like Joshua Roy? Seriously? You don't think he should be on the team before Tyler Toffoli should be? And again, at center, we've already got Suzuki, Doc, Owen Beck, Jared Davidson, Lucas Condotta, Xavier Simoneau, and others. Monahan served his purpose. I know he was loved. I know he was great in the locker room. He undoubtedly helped everyone from Nick Suzuki on down on the team. He was a great addition to the first or second power play unit. He's a great team guy. He loved his time in Montreal. He wants to be on a contender. They're not a contender right now. They will be soon. But again, the forgotten issue here is his injury past, unfortunately, is excessive, and they're not minor injuries. I'm impressed, personally, with what the guy's recovered from. I mean, the guy has gone through some recovery processes that would have taken most players out. Monahan has been a phenomenal story that way, but there's just not a place for him on the team. I mean, if you want to bring him back and maybe get a third first-round pick in compensation for him, that'd be kind of cool. But that's just kind of wishing for something more than anything else. There's just not a spot for him on the roster. And I know a lot of people go, oh, well, you can move Doc to the right wing. Look, everybody went after Canadiens management of the past when they kept moving around Alex Galchenyuk and Jesperi Kotkaniemi, didn't give them the proper line mates, didn't let them play at their natural position of center, and quite honestly were a large part of screwing up their careers by doing that. Does everybody want to see that happen to Kirby Doc? Kirby Doc last year, before his injury, from the moment he stepped on the ice at training camp through those first two games that he played, clearly was Montreal's most offensive player and best player, and looked completely calm at center and handled everything. He's that big center that Montreal has not had, get this, since Bobby Smith was the last 6'4", 200-pound-plus center that Montreal had. That's been a couple of years at least, for sure. Wouldn't you agree? But let the guy, he's a natural center. Yeah, he looked good on the right wing with Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki. Okay, Montreal's got other options there. Oh, I don't know. Alex Newhook, one. Joshua Roy, number two. Maybe Ivan Demidov from the 2024 draft. Or Cole Iserman. Wouldn't it be cool to have Cole Iserman, Nick Suzuki, Cole Caulfield, or Cole Caulfield, Nick Suzuki, and Cole Iserman on a line? There'd be something cool to watch. Let players play and keep players in their natural position. Moving on to the Laval AHL franchise, had an excellent season this year, was competitive right to the very last game of the year. JF Uhl, the head coach, and his staff have done a really good job and seem to be in sync with the NHL coaching staff of what the team needs, how players need to play when they get to Montreal so they don't look out of place and lost and actually seamlessly transition into the lineup. He's done that. I think the guy deserves an extended contract. I hope he gets that this offseason. It would be unfortunate to see that change in Laval, because I think he's really doing some things right, playing prospects right with the same type of patience that Martin St. Louis is doing in Montreal with players there, he's doing in Laval with those players. And I think that is just the greatest contribution that both those coaches have made to the confidence level of and to the successful play of all of the young prospects. That's why it's working. They're the right coaches at the right time for the state of the organization, the age of its players, and the direction it wants to head into for a long, long, successful time. Moving on to a couple of other NHL franchises for a moment before we dive into the playoffs. The Buffalo Sabres wasted absolutely no time in hiring their new head coach. Lindy Ruff is returning after being there for a 16-year stint previously from 1997 to 2013. And he might just have the voice that wakes these players up, because that's what the Buffalo Sabre roster needs, is a coach to wake them up. They just seem like they're in some kind of dream or trance or something and don't have their heads in the game all the time. And the franchise has got a lot of talent. The problem is not talent on the ice. The problem is not the GM, Kevin Adams. He's a great GM. They need a head coach that can, I don't know, rile the players up, get them motivated, get them out of a coma that they're in, because just something between the players taking the ice and then playing on the ice, there's a big disconnect there. Hopefully Lindy Ruff can take care of that. The San Jose Sharks, after their dismal season, have fired their head coach, Dan Quinn. New head coach there to be determined. They're definitely looking at prospects. I can't imagine they'd look at a long-term veteran head coach, because they're going to go through a similar process that so many other teams like Ottawa, Montreal, New Jersey, Buffalo, just to name a few, have gone through. They're going to need a coach that can evolve with those players and take them into the next multiple levels. And I'm not sure a veteran coach would be the right fit there. Maybe it is. I wish GM Mike Greer the absolute best in his search for a head coach. And now for the playoffs. And as much as I would love to see the Winnipeg Jets put it together and win it all, unfortunately, Montreal has their first round pick. So I'm rooting for Colorado to just wipe them off the map, unfortunately. And in a very entertaining opening game of 7-6 Winnipeg, that was a hell of a game. That really was. That was an outstanding opening game to that series. But I'm really hoping for Colorado, because I would rather see Montreal have a second pick in the top 19 rather than the 32nd pick overall. It would just be a greater value additional first round pick. Could the Dallas Stars be any unluckier of a team as they go against the Golden Knights again, that oppositely seem to be given the just greatest amount of luck of any NHL franchise? For some reason, the Vegas Golden Knights just have Dallas's number. I don't know what it is, but they just seem to haunt them like a ghost. They just cannot get them off their back. I don't know if that's because Dallas plays exactly the same game as they do in the regular season and doesn't take it to a different level, if they're lacking something physical. I can't imagine they're lacking a star player. They got a lot of really good players in Dallas. Their goaltending, though, in Dallas this year, Jake Oettinger seems to be off, and he's been off all year. He's had a really turbulent, bizarre, random year. It just has not been consistent at all for him. Maybe that's their problem this year. Florida Panthers look like they are in command of the Tampa Bay Lightning, and it looks like the Tampa Bay Lightning may join the Pittsburgh Penguins soon in the next teams to do some at least retooling, if not complete teardown. I think for Tampa, more than Pittsburgh, it would be a retooling, but they're definitely going to need to make some changes in the offseason. Moving to the Boston-Toronto series, I think it would be amazing for Boston to take out Toronto quickly, especially given the deletions, if you will, or losses or retirements of Bergeron and Krejci. I don't think anybody gave Boston the even remotest of chances to have the type of season that they did after losing those two guys. And probably in the playoffs, people were like, oh, well, you know, that's a lot of lost leadership and veteran. And I hope Boston takes out Toronto in 4-5 games max. Moving on to Vancouver and Nashville, and most people probably would not have thought of that series as one of the most entertaining or competitive. In the case of Vancouver, they didn't seem to turn it up, if you will, for the first round of the playoffs just yet. They kind of seemed like they were still in the regular season, and Nashville turned it up and surprised them by winning a game. So I think that series is going to be really, really competitive, but I do want to see Vancouver come out of that series, as they've had a great season. Rick Tocchet is a great head coach for them. The team put together a phenomenal season all year long and were one of the top teams in the NHL all season long. I would hate to see that go to waste in a quick playoff elimination. As for the New York Rangers and the Washington Capitals, as much as I would love to see the Washington Capitals win it because of all those people that said, oh, Alexander Ovechkin's got nothing left. He's old. I don't know if he'll even beat Gretzky's goal scoring total record. Really? I mean, after everything the guy's done, done? I'm rooting for Washington just because I want to see Ovechkin make all those people look as wrong as they were. That's why I want to see Washington win. As much as I want to see that, I think the Rangers are going to crush them. It just looks like the tale of two different teams. The Rangers are younger, faster, more energy. The Capitals just look like they are near empty in the gas tank and just can't compete with them, both from a foot speed perspective and a physicality perspective. Moving on to the LA Kings and the Edmonton Oilers. The Edmonton Oilers finally look this year like they have been able to retain or continue on with their offensive powerhouse talent and team that they have and dominate a series. It's not as close or doesn't look to be as close as previous series have. Connor McDavid and, of course, Leon Draisaitl, as well as Zach Hyman, have carried the team, and other players have filled in, played their roles, and contributed very, very nicely. I know there was some original concern with the goaltending moving into the playoffs, but that seems like it's held its own, and Edmonton seems to actually be doing a much better job at preparing for their opponent, knowing the type of system that they play, and being ready to play that game. Moving on to the Islander-Carolina series, Carolina looks to be in full control of that, although the Islanders did win a double overtime game, so it's a 3-1 series lead for Carolina at this point, but Carolina just seems to be a much more complete 1-4 lineup, 1-6 defense than the New York Islanders do. Now, of course, could the Islanders come back? There's always that chance. Patrick Waugh would be the coach that could make that happen, just on the emotions that he could bring to the locker room as the head coach. But I'm kind of wondering what the chance of reality is of that actually happening. That doesn't seem to be very likely, but never count them out. They're always in there. They always scrap and fight. And when people think they're just about to lose, they've come back. And they've got to be, I think, the team in the NHL that over at least the most recent years have played into the longest and most amount of multiple overtime periods that any franchise has played. It's just incredible the amount of double, triple, and they've even played games where they had 5 and 6 overtime periods in the game. It's just amazing. That just seems to be some type of identity of that franchise, irregardless of who's the coach and what decade it is. And with that, that wraps up episode 102 of the Hockey Free For All podcast. I'm your host, Steven Stiles. Have a fantastic upcoming week.